The PK Podcast.
Hello, and welcome to PK Podcast. I'm Nicholas Rodriguez.
And I am Juan Rodriguez.
Juan Rodriguez is my daddy. I'm his son, Nicholas Rodriguez.
And hello. I am the pastor daddy.
Oh.
Daddy pastor.
Pastor daddy. Me, I'm Sonny. Sonny kid. Sonny kid. Nico kid. And
we are here because this is where we talk about life, love, and
spirituality through the eyes of a pastor and his kid.
That's right.
Which, if you might have heard us just a couple seconds ago, he's the pastor and I'm the kid, believe it or not. And speaking of kids, I want to jump right into this because this is actually a conversation I'm quite passionate about.
Let's dive in.
So I am in the mood to talk about children today.
Let's talk about kids.
And it's because I really, really, well, a couple of facets of about kids.
Okay.
But starting off with the fact that I really, really would really want to have them.
Awesome.
One of my dreams, I would go as far as to say,
okay,
is to raise a beautiful daughter.
Raise a beautiful daughter. Oh my word.
Yes. If you ask me what kind of a kid I want, I guess. What type of kid? It would be the male type of kid.
The male type of kid?
The son type of kid. Because I originally would have wanted a son, right?
Okay.
But then I was introduced to my beautiful, precious, innocent baby cousins. Yeah. And I am fully aware of the fact that, you know, raising a daughter is no easy feat. As you know, the growing process, especially as a father, can be difficult with my lack of ability to relate on certain topics.
Right.
But I think it is well worth it because, man, when they are babies, they're just so perfect and beautiful and amazing.
When they're babies.
And I just want to spoil them, and I just want to take care of them, and I love them more than anything.
When they're babies.
Yes, and it brings me this insane happiness that I just love more than anything, and I need it to happen, and I need a little baby girl, and I want to raise her to be the best woman on the face of the planet.
And then they become a teenager.
Well, yeah, but I mean, like, that's kind of this inevitable thing, right? Of, like, your kid becomes a teenager and then they suck. But it's like, whatever, I get it. I was a teenager, I sucked. It's not going to make it any less, you know, annoying, but I'll get over it. My kid is going to suck at some point. Who cares, man? But, you know, I get a beautiful baby girl, and hopefully I'm able to teach her the things that allow her that once she's done being a little piece of crap, she will use what I've taught her to apply to her adult life and be just an amazing woman. But regardless of all of that, that desire of mine, as you could probably tell from how I described it, it's kind of fantastical, right? It's not very, it's not really based in a reality thing. Like, oh, I want to have a daughter because of this. I want to have a daughter because of this. It's very much just like I just think it would be so amazing, and I think it would be so fun and exciting and beautiful, and it would bring joy to my everyday life. But very recently, I began a study. Would you like to know about the study, Dad?
I am so excited to hear about your study.
The study of behavioral therapy.
Okay? Oh, wow. Behavioral therapy.
Yes. And so I started taking these classes on behavioral therapy.
All right.
And I have this ginormous, you know, hit me up. I got a giant Google Doc filled with notes and crazy things from books and all this kind of stuff about behavioral therapy. All
right.
And it was really cool, and it taught me so much about behavior in general, right? Like, behavior is an objective thing.
Okay.
So just to give you, like, this, like, basic foundation of it, right, is that behavior is supposed to be something that can be defined objectively in the sense of, like, it is something that you do, not why you do it. Okay.
Okay.
So you breathing, you standing up, you sitting down, you going whenever you're tired, you going whenever you wake up, those are all behaviors, right?
Okay.
The reason why you do behaviors can fall into different categories. There's the category of self-stimulation, right? Because it makes you feel good when you do it. There's the category of escapism, so that you can leave something you don't want to be in. There's the category of medical, right? Obviously, you might have a mental or physical what's the word? Ailment. Okay. That makes you act in certain ways or behave in certain ways.
Okay.
And the behaviors can be written down, they can be defined, and then once you're able to define the behavior, then you can, then and only then can you find out what the cause of the behavior is, right? Once you find out what the cause of the behavior is, you find out whether or not it's good or bad, right? So let's say the cause of the behavior let's say the behavior is that Jim kicks Sally every single time she goes, hi, Jimmy, right? And then Jim kicks her. You know what I mean?
Okay.
So the behavior is that Jim kicks Sally. That is a bad behavior, right?
That's a bad behavior.
It's not a good thing to do. But it doesn't mean that the reason Jim is doing it is bad. There, one reason could be
that he's evil.
That Jim hates Sally. That's a terrible thing. That's a whole nother lesson you have to teach him in the first place, right? Another reason why Jim could be kicking her whenever she says that is that
he's evil.
He's trying to get away from her. Is that he's trying to run away. He's trying to stop her from being around him. Another reason of why he could be doing that.
He's evil.
Dad, come on, bro. Listen.
I'm listening.
Another reason why he could be doing that is because maybe his mom, who's divorced his father or vice versa, used to greet him like that every single day, and he doesn't want to cry whenever he hears somebody say that to him. So he kicks her so that she stops, right? So we have all of these different possibilities of why behaviors can occur. But the first thing that you have to do before hitting it in the root is that you have to find, because you can't just make somebody stop feeling something, right? So during the process of healing, you need to find a way for the kid. By the way, this is what applies to children specifically. Adults do it all the time too. It helped me learn things about myself in my current adult life. But, you know, this is all a science that's applied to teaching kids, right? So you first want to find a way to essentially get the child to express how they're feeling in a way that does not harm anyone, including themselves, right? So every single time Sally says that, we could get a thing where he goes, we could just get him to say, please stop. Every single time, right? If that means that he has to say, please stop a million times and she gets scared of him, it's a whole lot better than him kicking her, right? So we're able to find ways for the children to express how they're feeling in ways that don't hurt anybody, including themselves, while also remedying the core of the reason why they're doing it in the first place. Does that make any sense?
Yes, that makes sense.
So I think during the study of that, it made me, I think that it helped me kind of view the way that not just kids, but people are in a more objective sense, kind of how you were talking about not taking things too seriously all the time,
mm-hmm.
right? Is that you see people do things or people do things to you and you see them and you go, okay, there is something else connected to this, right? That in and of itself is just a behavior. We then need to remedy the behavior in order to remedy the cause. If the cause is nothing to be remedied, right? If it's just self-stim or trying to escape or trying to get out of something, that's a completely different thing in and of itself. But if it comes from something more deep and more personal and something that they don't know how to express in any other way, first, we need to, you know, find them a way to express that properly. So it's something that it made me think more in that sense of, well, you know, people do things passively all the time that are connected to something else, and it's just kind of their immediate reaction that always works to solve the problem in that moment. right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and so I was thinking about, you know, my kids and how I can use these studies in every single way, you know, regardless if they're special needs or if they have, you know, a problem that may seem, a problem
hard to fix.
Yeah. Yeah. A problem that may seem hard to fix in any sense. It's something
or
that,
if they're evil
or if they're evil, I can always go back to, and I'll kind of be able to apply in a sense where, you know, because I don't, it's understandable to be mad at your kids when they do something stupid
mm-hmm.
or terrible. Right. But I think that what my goal is to stop myself from getting angry at them as much as possible so that I can be focused on getting rid of the thing that is obviously bad so that it can help them express themselves properly so that then we can get down to the root of the issue. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So not allowing the anger of the action allow me to be angry at the person because then we can... It's too... Not completely separate things, but one is more objective and definable while the other one is more abstract and needs to be explored throughout time. So with that said, it was one of the discoveries that I made that I think kind of confirmed that I want to have kids because I want to apply that and I want to help them get to that point and I want to express my love in that way. Obviously, I don't know what it's going to feel like until I get there because...
It's different to apply methods that you know to... it's easier to do that with kids that you don't know or kids of other people.
Right, right, right.
But it's a whole different ball game when you're applying those kinds of things to your own kids.
Exactly, exactly. Because... again, this is something, this is a person that you are constantly responsible for. We're talking 24/7, right? This isn't just like I go and I have a meeting with you and I talk to you. Or you're somebody else's kid and I only, yeah, sure, sometimes you're annoying, but at least I don't have to deal with you all the time, you know?
Exactly, because so, if you're applying those methods to kids and you do it over and over and over and over again, it's like, well, you know, you don't live with me, so I'm going to try to keep on helping you behave
right.
better and stuff like that. But then when it's your own child and you're applying the methods for like 30 times and they just don't get it, then you're like, okay, I'm about to spank you now.
Right. Yeah,
spanking
exactly.
is going to be your behavior modification right now.
Well, yeah, the spanking behavior modification is something that I would have to leave in the hands of my wife. I could never, ever in a million years do that. Dude, I wish I could say that I have the guts to smack my kid.
So I didn't say smack.
Spank, well, spank, you know. Spanking, smacking on the butt. That's what spanking
gotcha.
Is. So, obviously, smacking them in any other way is just is a completely different thing. But the spanking, I would not even be able to bring myself to that. I would drive myself to tears if I did that. And so, call me whatever you like. But that's how it is. And I would much rather apply this way. And there's also, you know, the idea of getting... what is it called? Reinforcers, right? So there are these things in behavioral analysis called reinforcers that essentially they motivate the child to keep doing what they're doing instead of doing the problematic way of expressing themselves, right?
Your wife's going to be like, are you going to reinforce them? Oh, okay. Well, let me take him to the room and smack him up a little bit with some spankings, and then you can reinforce him.
Yeah, I mean, hey, dude, if that's what needs to be done. But I understand that when they're teenagers, it's different. That's why it's important to instill it when they're children, right? So that hopefully I'll be able to build a habit in their minds of, okay, if I do this, I'm going to have to sit through one of Dad's behavioral analysis things again. That's going to suck.
Right.
So I'm just not going to do it.
That could work maybe
but you know, if it comes down to the nitty-gritty, if they're a teenager and they're still doing all these things, they don't even want to listen to me, that's a whole nother experiment. That's at that point it's just like, well, dude, you're grounded. Like I don't know what to tell you. I tried to help you so bad. I wanted to talk about what you're going through with you. I wanted to communicate with you and communicate ways that, you know, you could Because obviously I'm not going to do like discrete trial training when you sit at a table with a child, you go and you try to get it to a point to where they can do something, do a behavior independently without you prompting them or gesturing to them or anything like that. Obviously I'm not going to do that with my kid unless they're actually like special needs, right? Because it's applied differently. But I think that, to be able to reach kind of like that bridge, first I have to get to a point where I'm like, well, here's the better option of what you're doing. I'm not going to tell you what you're doing is wrong, but I am going to say that here's the better way of, or the reason why you're doing something is wrong, but what you're doing there is wrong. So that needs to stop first. Now that that's stopped, listen, tell me what's going on. We need to talk about what's going on. And if, again, that doesn't work and they still express themselves in that negative way, then it's like, all right, well, next step, you know, you're grounded. I'm taking things away. I'm doing this kind of stuff because, you know, then it becomes, well, I don't want to lose something, you know, or I don't want to feel pain if getting spanked is the thing.
Well, if that kid is a smart butt, that's a whole different story. If that kid is 8 years old and he's across your dining room table and he's not listening to your behavior modification, you just look him in his eyes and say, I will beat you.
I will
beat you until you fear. Cry.
I also think that it's important to note that when I talk about the behavior modification thing, I'm not necessarily talking about like following the framework or the patterns or the specific ways of approaching or speaking and the prompting and different hand gestures and all this kind of stuff. I'm not talking about all of that. I think what I'm mainly talking about is the core values, because obviously, again, the way I would express it is the way of a loving parent, which is very different than the way of the essentially the caregiver, the teacher type of thing. Like, you still kind of play that role, you know, but I'm not going to go and talk to them like I'm in a clinic. You know, I'm obviously going to, it's an imperfect system because I won't be following the exact guidelines of the thing, but I think that the core values of behavioral analysis are so good when it comes to raising a child. But again, a lot of people have had bad experiences with behavioral analysis. I actually learned this recently. People have had bad experiences with behavioral analysis because the kid does not have the breakthrough that the plan is trying to have them go through. And yet the behavioral analyst doesn't change it. They go like almost like it's their fault that they're not changing. Does that make any sense?
Yes.
Like, they'll keep the same exact plan, and it's like banging their head against the wall, and then it starts to frustrate the kid, right?
Yep.
So people have had really bad experiences with behavioral analysis, which, again, the idea of repetition, the idea of the formula, of the board, of all this kind of stuff, the token economy, all that kind of stuff, you know, it works in a classroom, it works on this kind of stuff, but you really need to take the core of what all of the good from it is, disconnected from the math of it, maybe not the math, maybe more so the science, because this science is variable. It's not supposed to be exactly the same every single time you do it. And I think that that's one of the most important parts about it, is that one thing doesn't work for everyone, right? You need to apply different things depending on the person.
And when your child comes to my house, I can spoil them like crazy.
Yes, yes.
And then I'll give them back to you, and I'll say to the child, go be modified. I just filled you with sugar.
go be modified. I just filled you with sugar.
Yeah, go to your daddy. He's going to behavior modify you.
I like how
you're about to go crazy up in his house.
Yeah, I like how that is the only, that's almost like the only form of parenting that I have, that because I explained it to you. It's like, now apparently that's like the only way I'll ever talk to my kids are in terms of behavior modification. It's like, dude, I'm still gotta be this person's dad. You know what I mean? Like, there are things of love and other things outside of behaviors that a kid needs to learn, obviously, right? Things about love, things that come from God, a bunch of stuff. I can, like, what am I going to do? Spend the rest of this podcast talking about every single thing that you should teach your kid? Like, what? I'm not going to do that. But,
right, because you don't have kids yet.
Well, I don't have kids, exactly. I only have kind of an idea of what of what I would do based off of how I was raised and seeing how other people were raised, and also my own discoveries throughout life or whatever. But the fact of the matter is that I don't have kids, so I can't really say, this is the best way to raise your kid. No, dude. I don't have a single kid. And as soon as I do, I may be super excited, but I'm going to be absolutely terrified.
And you can have that conversation, too, with your spouse to see how she
wants, of course,
to help raise your
kids. Yeah, because it's not just up to me, you know. It's right. not just me. It's a partnership, right? So, but I mean... That's a long time from now, I'm thinking. Unless something crazy happens in the next couple of years.
Because you are a single man.
I am a single man, ladies and gentlemen. But
all the single ladies out there listening?
Oh, no.
He's a single man.
Yep. Yeah, that's me. But anyways, that kind of transitions, not what you just said right now, but what I was saying about not knowing until you have them, transitions into kind of a closing conversation that I wanted to have with you about your journey in when you decided you wanted to have kids, what it was like figuring out you were going to be a father, and also what kind of ideas you had going in on how you were going to raise your kid.
Well, that has a lot to do with where we were in our journey. So we got married young. I was 21.
Whoa.
Yes.
You're too late. You're too late in the game. At what point in your life would you say that you decided you wanted to have a family, like with kids specifically?
Oh, you mean before I got married?
If it happened before you got married, unless while you were married is when you were like, you know what, I think I want to have kids one day. If that's the case, then, you know.
No, I think, you know, probably just being a young person, thinking about my future life, my future wife, my future family.
Mm. You know. So you always just imagined your future being with kids. It wasn't like a moment where you're like, you know what, I think I want to have a family. You just always were like, yeah, duh.
Yeah,
that's gonna be my future. I'm gonna want to have.
That's just life, and that's something that I wanted.
Right.
You know,
I didn't, from the beginning.
Yeah, I mean, when I started thinking about that kind of stuff, yeah, I mean, I didn't start thinking about it when I was like 9.
Yeah.
But as probably a teenager, I would think about my future, and I said, oh, you know, one day I'll have a wife and I'll have children. And I would love to teach them to become great people. Not necessarily at that point thinking about becoming men of God,
right.
But just thinking, you know, a person that will reach their greatest potential that they can have, you know, and just think about those things, because eventually I started dating your mom in high school. So these thoughts started coming in rapidly during that time of thinking, okay, this could be my future wife. I would love to have kids with her. That would be awesome. And then when we got married while we were in college,
that is crazy.
She was 20. I was 21.
That is psychotic. Getting married to a 20-year-old woman.
Yeah.
What on planet Earth, dude?
It's awesome.
Well, it probably was awesome. I've never met a 20. Like, when I was 21, I don't think I ever met a 20-year-old that I was like, wow, she would be such a good wife.
We have to remember that your mom and I were dating since we were in high school.
Yes.
That is a prolonged
You had a little Boy Meets World situation, I understand.
We were together for 5 years before we got married.
Yeah, Boy Meets World, yeah.
So while in college, we got married, and then I went off to the seminary in Andrews University. And then we kind of like, you know, we were using birth control, so we knew that we didn't want to have a baby right away because we didn't got no money.
And I mean, also, I imagine there was a point in your marriage where it was like you want to be married and that's it. Still be responsible for yourselves instead of shifting all responsibility to this tiny creature.
Exactly. And so, you know, after we were married for a few years, we started talking and saying, hey, maybe now it's time that we start, you know, maybe not using birth control and see what happens. We weren't necessarily like desperate to have a baby.
We were letting nature take its course.
Exactly. we were open to the fact that, you know, we could get pregnant or maybe we wouldn't get pregnant. Some people have a hard time getting pregnant. So we didn't know. So, So we decided to do that like my last year in the seminary, because I know for sure you know, she was going to finish, I was going to finish, and we were going to go off into wherever we were going to go as husband and wife, and being called to be a pastor. So the last year of our college year there, we had your older brother. And we were there for 6 months.
With
a baby boy.
Michigan. Wait. So you ended up, she ended up getting pregnant.
Yeah.
Right? In the process of allowing nature to take its course.
Right.
What was your reaction when you found out she was?
Oh, man. I was super excited. I remember when she told me and I started running around the house. Because I was super excited that I was going to be
running around the house. Yep. Like a little Looney Tunes character.
I ran around the house super excited that I was going to be a dad. And that started the journey into...
But was there any fear?
I don't remember the feelings of fear.
That's crazy.
I just remember the feelings of joy and happiness. And I think I may have been a little bit afraid, especially when you start reading books on being a good father. So we would read all kinds of books on how to be a good parent, or even how the baby can be healthy inside of your mom.
Yeah.
And all these things we were reading. So a part of it, when you start getting more knowledge, you're like, oh my goodness, I'm going to be a dad. I could ruin this child forever. But for the main feelings I had was just more happiness and joyfulness and really excited to have a baby.
Okay, so then baby's born, 6 months.
So baby is born, and I will tell you this.
Yes.
We can understand the love of God in many different ways. Mm-hmm. But I know this to be a fact, and I've said it to other people, and they don't believe me until it happens in their lives.
Yeah.
You will never understand how much God loves you until you hold your child in your hands.
Yeah, dude. That's something I'm looking forward to very greatly.
You will never understand the depth of God's love for us until you hold your own child in your own hands.
Yeah, dude. That is insane. That is so crazy and I'm not even exaggerating when I say that it is something that I look forward to so immensely because, again, I go back to my baby cousins. If I had to take care of my baby cousins for the rest of my life, yes, it would suck because I would have to shift responsibility entirely to them. But I will tell you right now that I would do it if I had to because I love them.
Yeah, I know, because they're babies. They're small now.
But
then they grow up.
Well, that's a completely different situation, though. I'm talking about the amount of love that I have for them being incomparable to the amount of love I'm going to have for my child when I hold them in my arms is crazy to me.
Yes.
And it's going to be awesome.
Yep. That is very true.
So
those were my feelings when I first held your brother in my hands for the very first time.
But was there, what were the feelings when you held me in your hands for the very
same first feelings?
Time? They're the same exact feelings.
Yep. You never understand how much God loves us until you hold your own child in your
hands.
Yeah,
but you didn't maybe like feel it a little bit more when it was me.
I felt a lot more when it was you.
Yeah, I know. And then you felt a lot less when it was Alex. all goofs aside, was there not ever a point, do you think, where you were like, I'm not ready to do this? Like even after he was born, where you're like, maybe I'm not ready to be a father? Maybe this was too soon. Maybe
no, I never felt that way. I think the only time that I felt like I needed to know what God wanted me to do was at a point in my life where I saw all the things that God was putting in my heart to do.
Yeah.
And then I balanced that with, but I'm about to have a second child, which was you.
That's me.
And I was like, how can I be a good father and do all these things that you're putting in my mind and my heart to do? And I had some serious prayer with God, and he spoke to me very clearly. And I heard him tell me, you do not worry about your children. You do what I tell you to do, and I will take care of your kids.
That's true.
So
we are in his hands. And I do feel like regardless of everything that you did that God told you that you needed to do, I never once in my life felt like you didn't love me, which is great, because I mean there's the concern right there kind of gone away in that sense, where it's like, well, I'm not going to be able to be there for my kids as much because I'm doing all this stuff. And he says, don't worry about it. And look, you didn't have to worry about it.
Yep. So that was one point where I was, you know, thinking, oh my goodness, what am I supposed to do? Should I be doing this? And it even happened recently, you know, what? When I was thinking about your brother, your little brother, going into high school.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, you know, maybe I need to shift my role of what I'm doing now into some different role and go maybe be a pastor of a local church or something like that, because, you know, as he's going to high school, I want to make sure that, you know, I'm there for him more while he's in high school. Mm. And I just sensed that God was telling me what you need to do is plan better to be with him. But right now I don't give you permission to knock on a door to try to leave this role that you're in right now.
Oh my gosh, dude. How do you get such clear words from God about this kind of stuff?
Well, I ask for a clear answer.
Yeah, but I like to ask for a clear answer too, but I don't think that I always receive it. Well,
usually it's when I take time to be alone with him for an extended amount
of time.
I'm in fasting and I'm just really...
You go next level.
In that zone, yeah. To talk to God. And that's usually when he speaks to me the loudest, because I make room for him to do so. I'm not distracted by all the distractions we have in everyday life.
And, you know, speaking to the thing of playing that role for Alex, I personally think that you're doing a very good job at balancing those, considering you still going out of your way to do things with, you know, not just Alex, but me too. And I'm just a 22-year-old man that's about to move out in a couple of weeks. So the fact that you still do it with me is absolutely crazy.
Crazy.
So, you know, I think that speaks to your fatherhood, and that I think your faith in God's words have only led you to success in fatherhood, though maybe a couple times you're a bit of a goofball. I guess I can deal with it.
That's good. Deal with it, because I will beat you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
I will beat you.
All right. Whatever. So yeah. Who cares? That's the end of the episode.
I'm sure people care. So as you're thinking about being a parent, maybe in the future, just be open to how God leads your life.
Yes. Be open to how God leads your life. And also think about this behavioral analysis stuff I talked about, dude. It's a very good approach to trying to teach discipline and also trying to get to the core of what your children are going through by using observable fact to lead you to the truth.
But if you have to, beat the devil out of them.
Yeah. Anyways, guys, I'm starting to think that God made you special.
And he loves you very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
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 Yeah, bye.